Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Brian Ellison. Today we're talking about bodies, and we turn now from the bodies of the dead to the bodies of the living, yours and mine included. What is this collection of skin and sinew and bone and tissue, if it is really more than just the sum of those things? Jane Gotch is here. Jane, welcome.
Hi, good morning.
You've spent most of your life in the world of dance. When you think about the body, what do you think of?
A tool for self-expression, where I live.
Where you live. Like it's a place that the real you lives inside.
I guess the real me, yeah. it's what I navigate through the world in. So it could be a place, it could be a vehicle.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, we'll explore that. I do want to talk about your years as a dancer. I mean, how does being a dancer change or affect a person's relationship with their own body?
Well, as a dancer, you view your body, as I said, as a tool. It becomes something you watch in the mirror every day for 8 to 10 hours. You're constantly working on ways to strengthen your body, become more flexible, to refine your tool, to be able to express yourself more freely, to not have to worry, like, am I going to fall out of this turn? Am I going to be able to hold the balance? Those kinds of thoughts hold you back creatively, and so you're constantly working to refine that to be more and more clear in your movements and technique.
Mm-hmm. Well, let me ask you more about that, but first let me introduce Molly Kadurka, who is also here. Good morning, Molly.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So, Molly, you render bodies as a painter, of figures mostly. You paint bodies specifically that are not moving, like a dancer's
Correct,
body.
Yes.
What is the body to you?
I think I agree with Jane in many ways that it's the thing that carries me through the world. But when I think of bodies, I think of images. I think my experience and even my memory is compiled of images, whether they are stationary or moving.
And images in the sense that the image really can capture what the body is, or does it, is it just an attempt at that?
It captures what the body is, and then what it is not. It can capture. It can use the body as a symbol. It can embody different ideas. It's really kind of a canvas for much more, and a tool, a great tool for communication between people.
It's interesting that you would call the body a symbol. Like, what does the body symbolize?
Well, it can symbolize many things. It's kind of up to the artist how you want to project a narrative into it or create a certain sense of something. I think of like pathos. You can have like a very languid body, which can communicate despair. You can have an ecstatic figure or figurative pose, which communicates excitement or reverie. Energetic poses. I think of a lot of like Greek athletic statues where every single muscle is tensed up all at once and there's a great deal of tension in the body. All of those, I think, when placed in context of other things within an image, can create a narrative and create meaning.
You do seem to paint a lot of bodies.
I do, yeah.
What's the fascination with it?
Well, I think I've always wanted my particular art to be accessible and immediately accessible. And one of the easiest ways to have your viewer empathize with your work is to show them a human form. I think we're, as people and as humans, we naturally empathize with the image of another human. It's something very primal. So when trying to communicate ideas as I want to do as an artist, it's a really great tool in order to do that. And aside from that, I love the images. I love the body. I like painting it. I like working with other people. So I get a lot of joy out of it as well.
Jane, when you work with people's bodies, I suppose Molly can make them do what she wants to because she's painting them, but you have to work with people's bodies when you're choreographing something. You have to work with them as they are, right?
Yes, but my job as a choreographer is to help take that person and their innate abilities and qualities and meld my vision with who they are. And usually that process, in my opinion, yields the best work that I can make.
Yeah. Talk about that process. I mean, how do you take your vision but apply it to someone else's body that reflects someone else's self?
Well, actually, I really agree with what Molly was saying. I feel some people might use the term body language, but I feel that it's really not, it's not a language as that we think of as words. There's something deeper. There's something innate to watching human movement that we register. We have this unending catalog of visual memories, even physical memories that our mirror neurons record, our brain records through empathetic response. And usually in the process of the piece, I don't know exactly where we're where we're going to end when we start. But in the first maybe five or six rehearsals, something becomes apparent about the emotion or the direction of the piece. And I'm not usually aware of that on a mental level. I'm aware of it on this physical memory level, physical awareness level of what's happening in the room with the dancers.
One of the things that got us thinking about this show in the first place was the exhibit at Union Station right now. There have been other exhibits like that before that show the human body, different organs, different stages of development, sort of frozen in time, plasticized, mm-hmm. actually, in these excruciating details, but also very beautiful ways. It occurs to me that the one thing all those bodies have in common is that they are being perfectly still in that moment, though. Does that render the body somehow, I don't know, less of a body? Both of you spoke of trying to capture kind of that moment, whether it's the ecstatic pose of the painter, Molly, or the motion of the dancer, Jane.
You know, I think a lot of people that I work with through my teaching of gyrotonic, it's a movement therapy work, if they have an image of what their body looks like internally, it is very much something like out of a book, what they learned in science class in high school, or if they've gone to the work of going to something like the bodies exhibit. And that's good, but there is another level of actually somatically experiencing those images, which become ideas of where their organs are in their body, how their bones move, the extent to which their cardiovascular system permeates all of their tissue. And mm-hmm. having a physical experience of that, I think, is a much more indelible, has a much more indelible purpose than seeing it visually.
Yeah. I mean, when you saw an earlier bodies exhibit, how did that affect you or affect your work?
Well, I mean, I went to seeing that with a pretty extensive background in anatomy. Mm-hmm. I was most struck by, there was an exhibit where they had extracted the entire nervous system from all of the other tissue, and seeing the intricacy and web of nerves, and that knowing that the nerves are what are bringing information into the brain and into our awareness. That's profound of how much information we're actually able to usurp and move through our bodies.
Yeah. Let me ask our listeners about their relationship with their bodies. Maybe you've seen the exhibit, maybe you haven't. How does your body define you, or not define you for that matter? What does it say about you? Give us a call at 816-235-2888 and share your reflections on the body and what it means for you. 816-235-2888. Might ask you the same question, Molly. Have you seen one of these bodies exhibits before?
I have. I've seen several. And I think especially when I first saw it, which was many years ago, when it first came out, I found it quite jarring, mm-hmm. for a number of reasons. Not just because it's working with cadavers, but really it's that it's showing a part of the body in excruciating detail, the side that we don't see every day. It's what's underneath. It's what's hidden from us. It's not our usual relationship to the body. And more than that, it breaks the body into its parts. So you're seeing, you kind of walk through the exhibit and it will show you a full body, but then it will start to break down the organs, or then the lymph node system, or then the nervous system. So I think that that's something we're not always used to seeing, unless perhaps you're in the medical field. And I think when you experience the body as parts, mm-hmm. You start to feel like, is that all it is? Because my experience is the body as a whole.
Because there's no such thing as a nervous system that is not connected to a person's body.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that by the time you get through the exhibit, you have so much reverence for, at least I do, you have so much reverence for the intricacies of the body and how amazing and serendipitous it is that that we're the result of this evolution. And
It's interesting you use the word reverence, because mm-hmm. that's almost a religious word. Do you find a spiritual or metaphysical quality to the body?
Oh yeah, I mean, if you're not going to worship the body, I mean, what else is there? I think that there's especially going through life, the body is something that is certain. I have a body. You have a body. I'm in my body. You're in yours. I think that that's absolutely something to revere and respect, just as individuals and just as members of humanity.
When you paint a body, and you don't paint just bodies, you do. I've seen some of your work. You do still mm-hmm. lifes. You do
absolutely.
Landscapes.
Mm-hmm.
How is it different, though, to be painting a person rather than a bowl of fruit? It's the same technical skills in a certain sense.
It is. And I started with figuration and then moved into more still life things and landscape later on. And I think that learning how to paint and draw the figure and work from the figure, you have to start to forget what you're actually looking at. So kind of forgetting those parts and trying to forget the names of things. So it's not an eyelash, it's not a nose, it's a form, it's light, it's shadow. And by letting go of those names, you can start to see the body for a more beautiful whole. And that's an approach that I try and use in whatever it is that I'm painting or drawing. It's not just like I've done a long series of rocks and different archaeological objects as well. And those have been touched by people. They have a history with the human hand. And I try and approach those objects just as I would a figure.
And I guess I'm curious about how it is that you capture that person. For that matter, a stone or a bowl mm-hmm. of fruit too. But when you're going for an emotion, mm-hmm. what is it? How do you translate that to paint? So when you say you're detaching the eyelash from the, mm-hmm. not thinking that's an eyelash, you're thinking this is part of this picture. But you talked earlier about pathos mm-hmm. or ecstasy being something you're trying to convey. Where does that happen?
I actually think that comes from having a deep knowledge of human anatomy and understanding the structures of the body that are underneath and how the body has to move and show itself in terms of an image or express itself through the through body language. And then as the artist, I get to distort that. Mm. So if I want to lengthen a body, you know, then I can do that, and that can maybe make that figure more graceful or seem more weightless than perhaps it actually is. Or I could also do the reverse as well.
Well, it's time for us to take a break. In a minute, we'll continue our talk about bodies, including yours. What does it mean to you? How has it failed you or helped you? Who would you be without it? Who are you with it? I'm Brian Ellison. Central Standard returns in just a moment. We're talking today on Central Standard about our bodies and ourselves. I'm Brian Ellison with the painter Molly Kadurka and the dancer and choreographer Jane Gotch. And we want to invite you to talk about what the body is to you at 816-235-2888. Joe has called us from Lenexa. Joe, good morning.
Good morning.
Tell us what you're thinking about this morning when we talk about bodies.
I'm a type 1 diabetic. I'm fairly young. I'm 25. I was diagnosed with type 1 diabetes in September of 2007 when I was 17. And it's the sort of changes that undergo, you know, once you have already started to become an adult and you're already in sort of a tumultuous time, it kind of ends up getting just almost, for me at least, I felt like I was robbed. Like, I used to be an athlete in high school. I used to have so much energy and do so many things, and just diabetes has just completely changed my life and my body. Like, where I used to have a whole bunch of, you know, muscle and stuff, not necessarily fat. It's just kind of weak, it almost feels like. And while, yes, certain diabetics can become, like, you know, athletes and everything, just how much time and pressure when I'm trying to get through school and so many other things has just become almost overwhelming.
And Joe, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, go right ahead.
Well, I was just going to ask you, Joe. I mean, it sounds like your body has let you down in some way. It doesn't match up with who you believe yourself to be or thought you were going to be.
In a way, yes. I wouldn't necessarily say, you know, sometimes, I mean, it's also mental. A lot of the times, you know, it might be because you're not keeping up with your insulin or something, because you feel so overwhelmed and whatnot, that it ends up feeling like maybe you're letting your body down. Maybe you're letting yourself down because you're not as up to date on everything that you need to, that you need to be. And then there's also intersections within our body, and our mental health and other things that we don't quite understand until we are confronted with them in our lives.
I appreciate your raising this for us, Joe, and thanks for being willing to share a little of your story in that.
Yeah, no problem.
Jane Gotch, when you hear Joe talk about his own body, what comes to mind for you?
I mean, I can completely relate to what he said. I had my first injury when I was 13 in my back, then in my knee when I was 16. I used to feel very much like Joe feels, and I completely sympathize. And a knee injury is nowhere compared to becoming diabetic, but I have felt as I have gotten older that I have learned the most in my field from my injuries. They have always propelled me into researching deeper to not taking for what I think about the body to be true, but questioning that. And I always discover something different. And through the process of adapting, I feel like I actually become a stronger human being. And that, to me, is where those intersections happen between the body, the mind, and the spirit or emotional self.
It seems like dancers are always trying to kind of push their body to the next thing. The thing that they can't do is the thing they now want to try to do. Is that fair? Is that true?
Correct. Or if you realize, you know, I'm 38, and that's actually old for a dancer. So if I can't do X that I could do when I was 21, what can I do? How can I focus on what I can do and have that inspire or elicit some new direction in my work?
When people come to you in the gyrotonic training or that you instruct people in, it's about health. It's about their bodies, but are they looking for something more than just physical health out of that?
I think most of my students come to me because they're in pain. I would say 90% of them, that's how they start. They've been doing a whole lot of other exercise or nothing, and they get to a point where they can't take it as is anymore. Someone refers them to me, and they're like, I'll try it. And that's usually where we start. But as they continue with the work, and I work with students for 8, 9, 10 years, some of them, it becomes a way that they ground themselves, where they reconnect back into actually all of the characteristics you were talking about, mm-hmm. Molly, like into their pathos, into their ecstatic nature. And it becomes something else and much deeper than just getting out of pain.
Well, I think about like the mind-body connection, and that almost that phrase is almost like jargon now, and it's sort of taken for granted. We all think, yeah, mind-body connection, I have that, sure. Mm-hmm. But you're never more almost painfully aware of that when you feel that your mind is solid but your body has failed you in some way, and whether that's injury or illness or disease. I think that separation becomes really glaring and kind of in your forefront when you have things like that. So it's great that you have this outlet for people to try and reconnect with, try and put those things back together and have, again, a more holistic self.
I really hope that both the dancers and the students I work with can begin to observe themselves in the way you observe the people you paint. Like with that kind of curiosity, mm-hmm. and reverence and patience for who they are and how they got to who they are.
Well, I'm a big believer in that curiosity will save you, not kill the cat. So I think
I'm interested hearing the two of you talk, even though you work in different media. you're both artists with the body. One of the ways that that you present the body, Molly, in your paintings is often nude. You do a lot of work with nudes, and I'm curious how that's different, or how that changes the conversation. What is different about painting someone nude and kind of their relationship with their body, even while they're posing for you, than if they were fully clothed?
Well, I think there's always a vulnerability to being painted, and that's just accelerated, I think, when you're disrobing. But I think the reason that I typically paint nudes is to allow the body to be itself instead of and allow it to be the symbol or the idea that I'm trying to communicate. And when you have clothing, you know, you have all these other factors that go into it. It's immediately the image is tied to a sense of time. Clothing defines your situation in class, maybe your personality. It's just a lot of other more topical or cultural attributes that generally my work steers a little bit away from that. So that's kind of why.
But there is this, you say vulnerability, and you said there is vulnerability even when you are fully clothed, but I would think there's also discomfort for a lot of people that sort of changes, and maybe it's the discomfort of the viewer in seeing the nude painting.
I think it's usually the viewer. I haven't had any. I mean, when I've worked with my models, it's really fun, and they look forward to coming, and it's very relaxing and very natural. It's not. Usually we have the radio on, or we're listening to an audiobook. It's just a very relaxing experience. I think where there's always an initial thing you have to get over being looked at so intensely by another person. But once that, once you kind of smooth that relationship over, which happens quite quickly, mm-hmm. You just sort of forget, and you're just two people hanging out.
With all the time that the two of you spend thinking about bodies, I guess I'm curious, what do you find most fascinating about the body? Is there a quality of the body or a part of the body that you find most fascinating? I've stumped them.
They're I have both to think
deep,
a little bit.
Deep in thought.
You asked me, I have to pick something.
I think for me, it really, like the first thing that popped into my head was that we're here at all. And that we're... that we're conscious of it. I think the consciousness of humans and just the awareness that we have, and this deep relationship that we have between our conscious mind and our physical bodies is the thing that stumps me all the time, or not even stumps, but really inspires and, I don't know, just produces that kind of awe and reverence, like I mentioned earlier.
And we maybe have still stumped Jane over here.
And I'm getting there. I think that my whole life I have been moving my body, and I still can continually learning. There, I will never get bored. It's like studying outer space and the cosmos. It's just inside of me.
Mm-hmm. Are there particular masters of your fields who you think deal with the body better, more perfectly than others, either in their choreography, in your case, Jane, or in their painting? I had never thought about the body in art and the way as deeply as I had before I was in Rome and saw some mm-hmm. of the sculptures of Michelangelo yeah. or Bernini, where they, you know, as you described, sort mm-hmm. of every muscle is just perfect and carved out of stone, and it really. What do you think of, Molly?
I mean, it's almost hard to saying Michelangelo is kind of, it's almost like the easy option, but I think when you do actually see his sculptures in person, they're just so overwhelmingly good, and like the scale of them and the amount of work that went into them, it's awe-inspiring, and it renders me speechless every time that I've seen them. So he's definitely somebody who I think is obviously a master, and maybe a little less known is Pontormo, who is also a late Renaissance fresco painter. And I really admire his willingness to distort the body. I think his he just does some really crazy twists yeah. and will like add in a couple extra ribs as needed, you know, and I like that. I think, you know,
that's the artist's prerogative.
It is. So and to see people take liberties with that so early on, I think is always yeah. fun.
Are there dancers or choreographers, Jane, that come to mind for you?
Oh, well, choreographers, my personal favorites would be probably Pina Bausch, William Forsythe, Bonnie Bainbridge Cohen, who's sort of blended dance and movement therapy.
And pick one of those. And what is special? What is so powerful about them?
Oh, we could do a whole episode on that.
Well, we can do the next 15 seconds.
I think the great choreographers have a way to bridge that and find that intersection between the body and the human experience and tell the story through movement.
Communicate.
Well, and on that note, we will let our listeners do the rest of their communicating and thinking about bodies themselves. I want to thank both of you so much for being here. Jane Gotch is a gyrotonic instructor at the Plaza. She's also a choreographer and dancer. Thank you, Jane.
Thank you for having us.
And Molly Kadurka is a painter. She has an exhibit opening, a show at the Haw Contemporary Gallery this August.
Yeah.
So thank you for being here, Molly.
Thank you.
You can find this program online, all of our recent shows, in fact. This one will be up later this afternoon. That's at kcur.org/centralstandard. You can also find us on Twitter. We're at kcurcst, and I'm at ptsbrian. Join us tomorrow. We'll have a Central Standard portrait session. This is a portrait in words, though. It's with the founder of the Free State Brewing Company in Lawrence. You can join us for that. We also have portraits online and photographs as well, so check that out tomorrow. KCUR Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our team includes Suzanne Hogan, Jen Chen, and Andrea Tudhope. Our intern is Anna Sterla. Gina Kaufman's on leave. I'm Brian Ellison. See you tomorrow.